folks, and welcome back to another Co-op the Cast. This is Co-op the Cast episode number 91 for Monday, August the 20th, 2012. We got a full house tonight. I'm Nick, we got Mike, we got Locke, we got Jason. How are you fine gentlemen doing?
Peachy.
I am fat and sassy.
I am less creepy than Locke.
And I'm the cute one.
All right, well, that's good to know. Can you guys believe August is almost over?
That means games come out now. Yay!
That's right. The fall
that means
season
we're about
after
to
the
get
summer drought.
Inundated and overwhelmed.
Actually, though, I tell you what, looking at the schedule, I'm not so sure.
I don't know. It's I bought six pretty games in the past week, I think.
Impulse. That's funny. All right, well, let's talk about games then, Mike. Since you've been buying games, what have you been playing? Something you actually got for free, huh?
Hey, well, yes, one of them I got for free, thanks to the benevolence of Valve Software. I've been playing a lot of Darksiders 2, which is even better than the first one, which I already loved. And they did a lot of nice action RPG things to the old Zelda formula.
Nice.
Added a little bit of everyone's favorite, Shadow of the Colossus. Except mine when it came out, apparently. Thanks, Jason. And yeah, I know. I got you. So I've been playing a lot of that. It's really fun. If you liked Darksiders or you like Zelda, you should buy it because it's great. And I also picked up Sleeping Dogs, which is actually really good.
Yeah?
Like, I expected it to be pretty cool from what I saw at E3, and I've seen some kind of so-so reviews about it. Like, I've seen people really like it or not like it at all. So I wondered how it was going to be. It turns out, like, I think it's pretty awesome. It's definitely GTA-like, but the setting is really cool. And I think if you enjoy the combat from the Batman Arkham games, you'll love it because it's GTA with that combat.
That's a good mix.
Yeah, it's really good.
Especially considering Arkham City was already kind of GTA with that combat.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's good though. I dig it, and the Asian setting's pretty nice. Get a little bit of an Infernal Affairs vibe from it.
Oh, nice.
Because the story is that story is basically a undercover cop sliding in with gangs and whatnot. But the real meat of what I've been playing is Man versus Machine, also known as the Team Fortress 2 co-op mode.
But wait, Mike, didn't Team Fortress 2 already have co-op because you played on Teams?
You know what? You shut your whore mouth. Team-based shooters are not co-op. They are cooperative, but they're not co-op modes. As you should know, Mr. Staff Member. Anyway, Team Fortress 2 finally added a wave-based survival mode, the choice du jour for any game that wants to slap a co-op mode onto a product that already exists. And, it's for six players. You can bring in any combination of classes and fight on some specialized maps against, I believe it's seven waves of ever-increasing difficulty robots. And
now, go ahead.
Oh.
I want to hear about the money.
I'll tell you about the money after I tell you about Man. I'll tell you about the money after I tell you about Man versus Machine.
Okay.
So it's basically Team Fortress 2 Horde mode for six players. You kill the robots drop money, you pick up the money, and in between rounds or after you respawn, you can go hit up a store and buy upgrades for your weapon. You get things like bonuses to health every time you kill somebody. If you're I played the pyro basically the whole time, so I had bonuses like my air blast. The power of my air blast was able to be upgraded. I could make enemies burn longer, things like that. So you combine all the familiar Team Fortress 2 classes with all their same abilities, and you take out the waves of robots. And the problem that I have with it is that it doesn't seem to be balanced very well for a mix of players.
In what way?
There's little to no reason to use certain characters in it because it's all based around crowd control. Support roles are extremely important.
Right.
And you need as much offensive firepower as you can get. So classes like Sniper, while they can do a lot of damage, don't have raw damage output to match like the splash damage from a soldier's rockets, Pyro's flamethrower, and so on. So what happens is you get people that pick a class that they want to play, but there's someone else in the match playing that class, and you leave yourself really weak in certain areas. Like, we played a couple rounds and there was no engineer. Everyone was running out of ammo, and we would have to die and respawn to refill our ammo,
right.
Or else be close to where the ammo boxes were on the map. And that didn't really work out so well. If your medic isn't overhealing everybody and deploying uber charges to the correct players, then you're not going to have as good a damage output as you need. Like I said, a sniper, when the big boss-type robots show up, they do massive damage to them, but there's certain rounds where there'll be literally like 50 scouts running at you, and you need...
Sniper's not going to hit those.
Well, sniper's going to hit one or two, but you need like the pyro to blanket it with fire to take that out. And
can't he throw his bottle of pee on those guys?
Yeah, you can use Girardi and things like that.
It doesn't kill.
A sniper would just get on their flank and wait for them all to be in one line and fire
right.
one shot through all their heads.
This
right,
isn't
Mister,
sniper elite.
This is a sniper elite.
I just couldn't find a real reason to bring like a scout. Scouts do okay damage, but they die so quickly, and you die really quickly in this mode. So like the scouts basically run around and pick up money. It's like their prime use. If you play as a pyro, when there's like the scout waves that show up, then you want to blanket everybody with fire and take them out. Otherwise, the only thing you want to do is take on the robot carrying the bomb. And the objective is to survive the waves while these hordes of robots will pick up a bomb and deploy it in your base. And if they get all the way to your base with a bomb, you lose. But the pyro, you know, you have the air blast, you can bump players around, and Pyro can bump the bomb as long as it's being carried by somebody. But the problem is the air blast uses a lot of your ammo. So you have to conserve your ammunition and basically only air blast people until you're in a good enough position where you can DPS and then go swing around, refill, and then continue to bump them with the air blast. And I just feel like that's not how most players play Team Fortress 2. They want to go in and just blow stuff up. They run, they just throw themselves into the fray and fire, you know, all over the place. But Man vs. Machine is not balanced for that. It's balanced for having a proper team makeup and having players fit into the role that their class needs to fill. And if you don't fill it, you're going to lose. And you can lose easily on the first round.
So let's talk. You talked about the gameplay. Let's talk about the politics around the gameplay and the queues and what Locke alluded to before, the pricing and stuff.
Yeah, so you can play Man vs. Machine on. So there's the server matchmaking that's existed in Team Fortress 2 for a while, and there's a couple ways to play. The boot camp mode.
Yeah, baby
which is,
mode.
It's, you know, free to play. Everything's free. All the content is essentially the same out there. You can queue up, you wait in line, play for free. If you have a beefy enough machine, you can start a private server, run Man vs. Machine, invite your friends, and just go right away. So, like, finding a game to play isn't really hard if you're computer savvy. Or know somebody with a good machine. But the kicker is that there is a mode called Man Up. And to play Man Up, you need to have bought a ticket to play a round of Man Up. And the ticket costs 99 cents. And if you have a ticket, you can queue up for for Man Up mode, which must be played through the server queue. Server queue is generally shorter because people don't want to spend money to play a free-to-play game as much as they want to play for free.
It's only 99 cents, though.
So what happens is there are, I believe there's seven, I think there's seven missions in that you can do in Man vs. Machine right now. And having a ticket to play Man Up allows you to complete one match. If you don't finish the match, you lose, you all quit out, you don't lose it. If you finish the match, it consumes the ticket, but in return, you get a exceedingly rare item that can only be got through Man vs. Machine.
And, a shiny hat?
Well, hats. I honestly haven't seen too much of what comes out of it yet.
Could be anything.
It's exclusive to that mode. It's randomized, but it is drawing from a pool that can only be earned from Man vs. Machine.
Yeah.
And while playing Man vs. Machine, you also earn items in the same way that you would playing normal TF2. So what gets people in a tizzy is you can only play one round every time you pay a dollar. So every time you play a round, you've essentially bought an item. So the people who are really against the microtransactions and item buying for TF2 are really, really up in arms about that idea. And to those people, I say, start up your own server and invite five of your friends and don't worry about it.
So essentially, here, I'm going to do something that PC gamers are really going to hate. You're going to pay $7 for a map pack.
Your mic just dropped out.
Oh, no. Hold on. Can you hear me now?
So
Valve knows that he's talking smack.
Can you hear me now?
Yeah, you're
PC
good.
There we go. Man, look at that. The man tried to mute me.
What's the secret?
Here's what I was going to say.
Tell us the secret, Nick.
Essentially,
Gabe's going to show up behind him with a Bowie knife.
Essentially, what you're doing is you're paying $7 for a map pack. That sounds similar to what you pay for a map pack on Xbox or PlayStation.
Yeah.
Yeah, similar, except,
say, you get hats. You don't get hats on Xbox.
The other thing is, if you have completed one of the matches using your ticket, you don't get to play that again.
You don't lose your ticket, though.
Yeah, you don't lose a ticket if you repeat a match.
Okay.
As far as I understand, now I've only played a few rounds, and the one time I did, for the sake of the site, it is co-op. I did buy a couple tickets to test out Man vs. Machine.
Good man.
Because, I mean, I wanted to see what it was like, and at the end, I get a shiny. I haven't gotten a shiny yet because all my teammates were chuckleheads because the mode is unbalanced. Like, every time I joined a Man vs. Machine match, I had three people wanted to be the heavy, and none of them would ever switch off of it. So we'd have three heavies, an engineer, a medic, and a pyro.
Great.
And, that's not going to do much for you.
All right.
I think it'll, as people kind of figure out how to play it, it'll kind of iron itself out. But as of right now, honestly, I'd probably hold off until the interest dies down a little bit. The people who regularly play make up more of your team than the unwashed masses. Get yourself a dedicated server and play with some friends. That's going to be my recommendation. Because when everybody's clicking, it's really fun. But the problem is people aren't clicking yet.
Yeah.
That's definitely the case when you play at randoms, though. I think if you have a dedicated team, it's a different story. And I think this update has definitely revitalized the game, and almost coming out of nowhere, like they did an ARG to sort of tease the game out with this new comic and kind of working in this fabled TF2 lore about the other Manco brother. And I think
there is a lot of TF2 lore.
It's crazy. Yeah. For a a free to play sessional game, it's insane what they've been able to squeeze out of it. But I really think that it forces people that have been playing Team Fortress for a long time to think about the classes differently, to think about trying new classes, which I think is important because my friend who's played about 3,000 hours of Team Fortress 2 plays Soldier exclusively, and now he switched to Engineer for this mode, which I think is really interesting, and it forces you to definitely communicate, and man up mode is difficult. It is very tough. Like, I haven't passed one yet, and it forces people to, like I said, communicate and really act as a team, and I think that's awesome for co-op. I think that by making it so difficult that, and actually putting some money on the line, like, people actually have to sort their shit out and talk and not just sort of half-ass it. If you want to just have a relaxing casual game, they also have that with the boot camp mode, which is great. Like, that's perfect for people that just want to kind of sit back and kill some bots, which is awesome. Team Fortress doesn't really have that, and now it does. So I think it's serving definitely to two different audiences almost, but it's great. It's super, super exciting, I think. I'm excited to get back into it.
Cool.
Yeah.
So, Locke, you were actually on vacation when all this went down, so you missed all the goodness.
Totally missed it. This all came to my face, like, as soon as I got home on Sunday night. I read it, and I saw the updates. I hopped in, and I was just like, oh, sweet. That is really cool that they... I don't know if I can't tell what goes on behind closed doors at Valve, but I don't know if you guys play Super Monday Night Combat. It's very similar to that mode, the Blitz mode in there, which is good. Like, they're both really good co-op modes, so awesome for those guys, for Valve doing that.
So Valve iterates on Team Fortress 2 so quickly, I feel like it's going to be ironed out pretty quickly.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, any of the issues. But right now, there are issues. I mean, it is... Like, I don't think a game being hard is a bad thing, but I think it can be off-putting if you're trying to make, microtransaction money off of it.
And what better sort of platform for more co-op nights for us, which is great. I think that's awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah, actually, one more thing. I did find that some of the weapons that you can either trade, craft, or buy them off the TF2 store. Some of the other weapons are a lot better in Man vs. Machine than they are if you take them into a normal TF2 round. So, if you've got a stockpile of items you're trying to trade or whatnot, maybe you should test it out in Man vs. Machine, see if it might be useful for you there.
I like where your head's at.
All right, well, Locke, what have you been playing since you were on vacation? Did you play games on vacation, or did you
really not
chillax?
Too much? I chillaxed, played a couple board games. I played an iOS game called Jack Lumber, which is Fruit Ninja but with maple syrup, Canadian. So
it sounds very Canadian.
It sounds awesome. It's a really fun game. It's like $2. Go play it. Played Blue Shield Alliance on Xbox Live Indie Games. That's fun.
I don't know of this game.
It's good. It's the reason being, like, I had friends over and I was like, I haven't played enough of this, so I went and showed them and was like, hey, my buddy made this, and we played it for quite a while. So
did you guys think it was too hard?
No, not
that's
at
been
all.
The number one complaint. Oh, it's too hard.
Well, people gotta get better at games. So
exactly.
it's a shoot 'em up at its core. Like, they're supposed to be difficult. So. It's not as difficult as, say, like Ikaruga, so...
Yeah.
No, it was really fun, and I think it adds an element of customization that doesn't exist in shoot-em-up games, which I think is awesome, and I like that, and, if you guys know me, I like dressing up my dolls and customizing stuff, so, it's two good
things
together.
You got something on your nose there, Locke.
It's suntan lotion from all the sun I've been in. Other than that, just finished up Prototype 2. That's a good game. It's too bad that Radical got dissolved, because that's a fun game. Make sure you guys play that.
But, cool.
Yeah, not too much
I'll
else.
Add it to my list.
Ready to delve into some heavy gaming this week.
Nice.
I've been going through withdrawal.
All right, Jason, what about you? What have you been playing?
So like Mike, I've been playing some Darksiders 2, and just to reiterate, it's a great game. Definitely recommend it if you were a fan of the first one or even a fan of Zelda.
Might I interrupt?
No.
I would venture and say that as far as like big console releases I've played this year, it's probably right at the top of my list.
It's up there?
Yeah. It is the top of my list right now.
Sorry, I know we shouldn't jump around like this, but what platform are you playing on?
Xbox.
360.
Okay, just curious.
But I hear that if you buy it for the PC, you get a hat in TF2.
Perfect. Perfect. I'm in.
I'm going to super.
I got the sleeping dog's hats.
So anyways, that's great. And it's interesting that they took what was, you know, essentially a Zelda kind of game in Darksiders and made it action RPG and added, like, purples and blues and all this other kind of stuff through the game.
So, crafting, kind of.
Yeah, makes it really interesting and a lot more fun, too. Aside from that, other single-player stuff that I'll knock out real quick, Book of Unwritten Tales, which has a lot of really good tongue-in-cheek humor and a lot of sort of nods to all kinds of geek culture. And I mean, like, the very first, like, there's a robot that you have at the start, and it's looks like Bender Bending Rodriguez. So, I mean, it's interesting, and it's a lot of fun. Really great soundtrack to it, too. And then the other one has been, I don't even remember what it is, so let's skip it. So the other game that I've been playing a lot of...
So memorable.
A Virus Named Tom, and Tim Keenan from Misfits Attic recently put up an article for us for Indiana Co-op talking about design.
He wrote your column for you. You owe him.
He did your work.
That's love it. Rad.
We should get him into
E3. I didn't even have to edit your video.
Thus far I've had three people do my work for me. But it's really good. Like, these are the when I first kind of came up with the whole idea for Indiana Co-op, this was something I always wanted to have, and I've been really pleased with the entries I've gotten from folks so far, from Final Form and now and Cadenza, now from Misfits Attic, because Tim had a lot to say that I thought was really interesting about designing a cooperative puzzle game, which is what, you know, Virus Named Tom is, and particularly for a genre of game that you don't see a whole lot of co-op play to. I mean, tons of multiplayer competitive, tons of just single player, but not anything that's to this degree where you have up to four people in this case working together to solve a puzzle, and it's insanely, insanely fun. I mean, like, even though it's limited by local co-op play, having like four people crowd around the screen and all kind of sharing the keyboard, and you just get like a little bit of that camaraderie that comes about with trying to solve a puzzle, but at the same time griefing one another. Like, there's built-in griefing mechanics that make it a lot of fun, that just kind of add to it all. So I definitely recommend, like, if you're a fan of puzzle games and you're looking for a great sort of local game to play with people.
What's interesting, too, about it, you should mention that it's not like a slow kind of, like, let's plan out what to do. It's a Twitch-based puzzler.
It's one of those things, like, I was tweeting at Tim when I first started playing it. It's so maddeningly ingenious that it is Twitch, because you just sit there and you play through a level and you look at your score and you look at then that leaderboard of his scores are in there and your friend's scores are in there, and you're just like, I can get there. I can.
So it's like Geometry Wars.
Yeah, I mean, you get hooked into, I can get that much faster. I can just, okay. Because what it becomes is not so much of how do I solve the puzzle, it's how do I solve it in as few moves as possible. And you're just like, if I go here and then here and then here and then do this. So if you take that and add three other people to it...
That's madness!
It is! It's like sheer and utter madness, but it's like sheer and utter madness of a just fantastic nature. Like, there's no other game that I can think of in a while that I've had that much fun with, except for Portal 2, when I played through Portal 2's co-op mode with Mike. Like, he and I just laughing at, like, the crazy-ass stuff that we were doing and causing each other to die and griefing each other and that.
Yeah, the griefing that we did. I totally forgot about some of the stuff we did in that game.
And it has, like, those same moments.
Yeah,
but, like, there's an awesome moment in Portal 2, spoilers, the co-op mode where you launch at each other at the same time, and you just have to get it down, but it's such a great moment when it happens. In A Virus Named Tom, it's that same moment every single level when you get it down. Like, when you get that level just down just right with your friends, it's that same moment because you're like cheering in your, you know, yes, I beat this person's score, or yes, we did in this amount of time. So
nice.
It's a lot of fun, and it's the soundtrack, I think, too. If you buy it off of their website, off of the Virus Named Tom's website, you get the soundtrack with it, and it's a good soundtrack to listen to as well to kind of go along with things. So that's cool. What I've been playing.
Nice.
Cool.
Dang.
Yeah, we'll have to fire that up at PAX, guys. Maybe play some in the hotel or whatever.
I'd like to go bug. I think they're part of the PAX.
Go tell Tim you want to play. He'll gladly boot up something for you guys, I'm sure.
Yeah, I'll have my laptop with me with it on it. So I've only played a single player, but it's good stuff.
Nice.
And Nick and I are road tripping, so we can throw all sorts of games in the back of my car. Bring it to PAX.
Yeah. Along with Game Station. Oh, wait, sorry.
Yeah.
The one last thing I'll mention, though, is the prohibitive factor to all this is it's four people if you have a gamepad. If you don't have a gamepad, then you're limited to three, because that's how many people can fit around a keyboard. So,
yeah. So one person has to use the mouse.
No, both. You're playing three players.
Three players at one time. We don't call that video games, sir.
Time out.
That would get editor's choice if that was the case. This game got a whole lot more cooperative. But no, there's no mouse. It's all keyboard and gamepad.
Cool. All right, let's move on. We'll wrap up what I've been playing. Been kind of working through the backlog to finish up Mass Effect 3. I fired up Arkham City, which is pretty decent. I don't know. I don't think I like it as much as actually the first Batman Arkham Asylum.
I'm with you there. I still really liked it, though.
That's a fair argument.
And then I played some Modern Warfare 3 co-op with Andrew. We downloaded the new Chaos Pack, or whatever it's called, which adds the Chaos Survival Mode. Basically, it's just nonstop waves of enemies, and it's addictive. Like, you don't survive very long. I think our best was like 4 or 5 minutes. But the way that they made it addictive is they added like multipliers. So as you kill guys, the multipliers go up, and you got to keep the combo going. And it's between both players, so like you don't even have to be next to each other to keep that combo going and earning points. So, you know, it plays the whole we got to earn the highest score possible. The problem with it is the people that have the highest score possible it's just obscene. They played for an hour and 40 minutes. Okay, we survived 4 to 5 minutes. They played for an hour and 40 minutes and had like 2 trillion points, and we had like 5 million. So it was.
Well, dude, it's okay. Back to school is coming real soon.
Yeah. And then all of those
so, like, the thing is, like, I can't fathom playing that for an hour and 40 minutes without your eyeballs just completely melting and your hands just disintegrating. It's just.
Because you're an old man.
I think you can put that on the back of the box. Modern Warfare.
I don't know how anyone could play this game for more than 5 minutes. Box quote.
But anyway, so yeah, the Chaos mode, it's pretty cool. It's, you know, and then they also added some Spec Ops missions, which tomorrow night we're actually going to play, and then we're going to put up a little video feature on. But it's fun. It's probably worth your space bucks.
$15 or whatever those things cost.
It adds a lot because it adds the Chaos mode, which is available, I think, 4 maps, and then it adds 4 additional Spec Ops missions and then a ton of other multiplayer versus content, but I don't really care about that. Anyway, and the last thing I've been doing is Blue Shield Alliance development. Once again, working on the PC version. We went up for pre-order this week on Desura, which is a really cool service. I don't know if anybody's used Desura or checked it out, but they do some really neat stuff with their client and for indie games and just games in general, providing developers some good tools to use and building a community around your thing. And they allow you to set prices and create sales and, you know, spawn off different versions of your game, have bonus content. Like, we have a special edition for $1 more, which you get like the soundtrack and some like PDFs and some concept art and some other stuff with it.
Pay a couple extra bucks.
Yeah, so, you know, it's really cool. And like I said, you get like forums and, you know, some chat stuff there, and you get to see some details of like where your sales are coming from. And just, I don't know, it's compared to what I've seen with like the Xbox indie game stuff, which has just completely soured me. It's kind of a breath of fresh air. So
Yeah, it was interesting to read your Reddit thread there
on
the indie thing, and definitely sounds like the direction to go is PC first and then kind of go from there.
Yeah. Yeah. So, hopefully we'll have a patch out for the Xbox version of BSA soon. I've been trying for like 4 weeks now, and it's just stupid technical hurdles and all these other things have kind of forced that back, but
And that's because you need other indie developers to rate it?
That it's not rate it, it's just actually download it, play it, test it, and give it the thumbs up that it's okay, right?
Right.
And so the inherent, you know, we're getting a little off topic, but real quick, the inherent problem with the system is this. There's all these developers who are spending all this time developing their game, and then they want people to review it to post. You need X amount of reviews. The problem is those people that are reviewing the games are the ones that are developing it, so they don't have the time to play, test all these games, and review it. So it's just kind of a flawed system. So unless you catch these people that are waiting for reviews, you know, it's kind of a give and take kind of thing. I'll review yours, you review mine, okay. It's just, and the other problem is you can just pick and choose. Like, there's no queue system, or you just, you know, pick whatever you think looks good. So, anyway.
That's weird.
We'll move on from that. PC version's gonna be good. We got resolution support. We got some nicer graphics in there. Mouse and keyboard controls and some other good stuff, so.
Hats? TF2 hats?
We're gonna add hats, for sure.
Okay, sweet.
For sure.
Good.
But let's move on to our headlines, and let's talk about some co-op news. And hey, look at that. I covered our first item. Blue Shield Alliance is available on PC for pre-order.
And I covered our second item.
You did.
Hey.
Team Fortress 2 has been received. We're moving right along here. This is great.
And I covered our third item? I don't know.
No, we didn't talk about the third item, but it's a good one. The dev tools, they were mod tools, map tools, whatever you want to call it, for Portal 2, the Perpetual Testing Initiative. You now can make co-op maps in it, which is pretty sweet. Have you guys tried it?
No, but now I want to.
Can you cooperatively build maps together?
I think you do. I haven't tried it out.
Oh,
I haven't tested
man.
Out the map maker yet.
I'm just looking at a screenshot and it melted my brain. Like, designing a portal level, like, that's
does
ridiculous.
Not compute. Does not compute.
No, it does not compute. But you know what I am going to do? I'm going to go see if I can take the levels from Cube and see if I can build them in Portal and see
works. You're talking about the, what was that, early 2000s sci-fi movie Cube?
Yeah.
No, he's...
No, but that's an even better idea.
You should take the...
Coming out.
You should take the levels from Crush and make them in Portal.
Oh, see, now my brain is hurty. So, that's sweet, though. Because the only reason that came up was because I had a Portal 2 coupon in my Steam wallet.
Nice.
They gave it out to everybody, so...
Cool.
If you don't own Portal 2 on PC, there's no reason why you shouldn't. It's basically free.
Yeah. Let's talk about Diablo 3. This was just actually announced today in the 1.04 patch, which I believe is live.
No, it's not. It's not out for another... It's in preview. Extensive preview.
Okay.
This is the please, fans, love us again patch. Because,
So basically, it adds some changes to the end game content, quote-unquote. When you reach level 60, people complain there wasn't much to do. That's part one of it, anyway. So they added a system called Paragon, and the Paragon system has 100 levels, which each level increases core stats such as strength, dexterity, intelligence, etc., etc., as well as adds 3% magic find and 3% gold find, as well as adds a fancy little border around your portrait with each level.
Hey, man.
Can I just say something about this?
Sure.
I read this, and I was reminded of a quote from a very great film, which was... These amps go to 11. What? And the response was, well, why don't you just make 10 the new 11? No, these amps go to 11.
It's one more.
Yeah, it's one more.
Yes.
So yeah, so you got your Paragon, and then we just mentioned gold find and magic find. I guess that was a big problem.
I don't see the renegade option on here.
Renegade?
Yeah. No? Not,
it's
not
a Mass Effect joke.
Ah, oh, come on, Nick. Finish Mass Effect.
I did finish it. I finished Mass Effect. Finally.
So I can...
Go ahead, Mike. Learn us, because I'm
actually,
still on act
we're going to be talking about some other Diablo 3 stuff. I'll save it for our little discussion.
Okay, we'll talk about it in the future discussion. Woo. And let's talk about Army of Two, The Devil's Cartel. Dude Bro Returns. That's what they should have called it. Army of Two, Dude Bro Returns. Yeah.
Someone, don't leave me hanging. Thank you.
But yeah, so we got a trailer for it, and we got some gameplay footage from Gamescom. We got to see about 10 minutes of co-op gameplay. And it's also... Oh, I don't have it in here, but Game Informer, the latest issue, Army of Two Devil's Cartel is the cover, and it's actually a complete issue of co-op games and co-op stuff, and they don't mention Co-Optimus! Anyway.
And they ripped off our stuff. I mean,
yeah, they ripped
not
off
accusing
our little,
anyone of theft, but...
They used our little icon. Like,
you already did stuff. For me.
Yeah. Anyway, let's talk
about
it.
Time to reach out to Phil Kohler.
So the big
he doesn't work there anymore.
The big thing about Army of Two Devil's Cartel is it's supposed to be more serious. So they're getting rid of the Salem and Rios characters as the main characters, and they have Alpha and Bravo, because nothing says more serious like generic character names. And they're also dropping back to more generic looking masks on the guys. I don't know if you guys have seen the screenshots and stuff, but the guys. It's just,
yeah,
I don't know.
It's like a black and white.
It really screams generic. Anyway, let's move on.
Well, don't they have, like, mask
customizations? I always thought the masks were kind of lame anyway.
Yeah, I mean,
shut your
mask
mouth.
So, what they've been saying, though, is the subject matter is going to be a lot more serious, and, you know, that's the tone they're going for. So, we've got to see some gameplay footage.
Hold on. Isn't that exactly what they said about 40th Day?
Just wait. I'm getting to that punchline. Give me a
every second. Game ever, it's more
I'm
serious than more
getting
mature.
To that. So we got to see 10 minutes of gameplay footage, and you know, they're sniping. We got a guy in a helicopter covering the guy on the ground kind of thing. Some cool co-op stuff. Then all of a sudden they
Is
activate.
Dubstep?
There was no dubstep, but...
Was the Inception bong in there?
They activate some kind of cool new gameplay feature, which slows down time. And if you both activate it, it's double slowdown time. I can't remember the feature name off the top
Whoa.
Of my head.
You know what game did that? 50 Cent yes. Blood in the Sand.
So what happens when you're in awesome double slowdown time mode? Well, you shoot the guys and their bodies and limbs explode. Because it's a more serious tone.
If you click in the right stick, do they swear?
I don't know.
All right, okay, so 50 Cent Blood in the Sand still remains the greatest third-person shooter of this generation.
Agreed.
Yo, Fitty, hit that big-ass ramp. I'm sorry, it just does not get better than that.
So all that aside, it does look like it's a pretty cool game. Army of Two was fun for the most part. It wasn't a great game, but it was fun. It had its moments.
Those games are flawed. They're fun as hell, but they're flawed.
Yeah.
I don't understand why they decide to bring back this and try and make it more serious. Like, you have Battlefield, you have Medal of Honor. Those are serious yeah. enough games. Why wouldn't you go the opposite with this?
Exactly. Go well, towards the more 50 Cent route,
and just be like, yeah,
style.
Like, just make this stupid as hell.
Because
you know what?
It
thing,
is.
Right?
You're not fooling anyone.
Call of Duty Medal of Honor, I mean, for those in terms of their seriousness tone, they're also like, some of them are to the great degree, right? That's just kind of, you know, you don't really feel the impact. But what people have really been saying is Spec Ops The Line yeah. has hit a tone that was amazing. And I think that, you know, in terms of you actually feeling repercussions. And so I don't understand, and there was an article I read recently about this, of why people think more mature or serious games means, like Nick said, bloody explosions or right. more guns or something like that. It's like, that's not really what makes a game serious or mature. It's being able to deal with this content in such a way that you don't feel comfortable. Like, you feel like that's a bad choice and I feel like a bad person.
It's usually the writing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And maybe that's what they're getting at. Yeah, the story's more serious. It's, you know, obviously it's around Mexican drug cartels and all that stuff going on.
You mean, luchador masks instead of hockey masks? Like, hello?
Missed opportunity.
Seriously, what are you thinking? You take Lucha Heroes de la Ring and put them into Army of Two and gold.
And mix it with Chili Con Carnage.
Oh, man. Why don't I work there?
All right, so let's move on.
They're right down the road from you, right?
Let's talk about the other serious game coming out soon, and that's Borderlands 2. Okay, it's not really serious, but it's going to be seriously awesome.
I'm going to Joey puke my face off at how serious that game is.
I'm going to flug munch my butter dome.
So whole girlfriend mode controversy aside, one of the things that was talked about Borderlands 2 is a new skill tree that's kind of designed for the not-so-traditional first-person shooter gamer. And yes, it was dubbed girlfriend mode in the interview, and the whole thing got blown out of proportion. But it's a good thing, because it means, you know, your non-gamer significant other, which doesn't exactly roll off the tongue, can play the game with you. And maybe...
Or your little brother, or any, you know, anybody who's not, like, a big gamer.
Yeah.
Potentially. The thing is, we don't really know how effective that tree is. It could just be like, this is my buddy sucks, so I have to be a necromancer.
What if they called it the I suck at gaming skill tree? I mean, would that have gone over better? I don't know.
Why don't you just call it the noob tree?
The noob tree.
No, it's the my buddy's a chud mode.
hey, we all have friends.
Chuckleheads.
Like that, okay. Yeah. Not everyone sits in front of a damn TV for most of their life,
first thing, the Mechromancer, I think that was one of her skill trees, right? Was it the Mechromancers that had that?
Yeah.
The Mechromancer's coming sooner rather than later.
Right, and that's kind of part two of it, which is she's going to be a downloadable character class to play in the game. Also announced was a new, high-level characters. We talked about high-level content before, but there's what they call an invincible boss battle. And his name is, it's got a funny name, Terramorphous the Invincible. And apparently...
Sequel to Cromorax the Invincible.
Yeah. Apparently, if you're not cursing the developers when you fight this in four-player co-op with max-level characters, they didn't do their job. So, it sounds like they're really...
Cromorax, that'll happen because it was busted.
Yeah. I mean, it sounds like they really learned a lot from the first Borderlands and really listened to a lot of feedback and really are incorporating a lot of stuff into the second one. So, and this is out in like, what, 2 weeks? 3 weeks? It's like September 9th?
End of September, buddy.
No, it's not end of September, is it?
Yeah, it is. It's like September 28th or something.
18th.
So
we got
a month.
I thought it just got delayed.
It's a month. Anyways.
Yeah, anyway, good stuff there from Borderlands 2 and our pal Randy Pitchford.
Who loves co-op.
Yeah,
watch good interview.
Let's
go
wrap
watch
up
it.
A news with kind of non-co-op news, but kind of interesting nonetheless. BioShock Infinite apparently was going to have a co-op mode or two in it, but it's been cut. And actually, you know, there's been a lot of interesting things going on with that game. In fact, you know, not being shown at E3, delayed to next year. Now we're hearing this stuff cut. A lot of producers left Irrational and went to some other studios, while the Gears of War guy, Rod Ferguson from Epic Games, left there and has gone to Irrational. So there's been a lot of shuffling of execs and some other stuff involved here with BioShock Infinite. But, yeah, it was supposed to have some co-op, but now it doesn't. Would it have worked? Maybe. I don't know.
Hey, at least they tried.
It would be cool to see a co-op. It doesn't fit in this game, but I always thought it would be cool to see a co-op mode in BioShock where it's the big daddy, little sister thing, and one person's
daddy,
and one person's little sister, and kind of go from there.
So play Fear 3?
Sort of.
No. Mm-hmm.
Some sort of spin-off game. Like, I don't think co-op belongs in BioShock, but I like the idea of doing that.
Yeah,
like daddy, little sister.
It wouldn't be the story. It would be a mode of some sort.
Yeah, but that'd be cool.
But anyway,
fighting off splices.
Let's move on to our topic of the night.
Topic du jour?
Yes. And it comes from, we're going back to Diablo 3, and it comes from...
Comes from Blizzard themselves,
yes.
Right?
Yes. So this was actually, I think this was back with the 1.03 patch came out.
Yeah, it's from a couple weeks ago.
Yeah. Here's the quote. It says, "While many people are playing co-op, it's still the minority of games. Ideally, we would like players to want to play solo, or ideally we would like players who want to play solo to be able to solo, and players who want to play co-op to play co-op. At the moment, though, solo play is the clear choice, and even those who would prefer to co-op, or even for those who would prefer to co-op with their friends."
That baffles me.
I have some insight.
Okay. So
let's hear it.
Basically, the summary is solo play trumps co-op play in terms of sheer numbers.
Not surprised.
I've played like 100 hours of Diablo. So.
And did you play that all solo?
I realize that's sad. So what happens with Diablo, and a lot of the player base for that game likes to compare it to an MMO. It's like, I've hit the level cap, I've cleared Inferno, I need more content, there's nothing for me to do. Give me endgame content. And the thing that people don't get is that Diablo has a finite end. You beat Diablo, guess what? You beat the game. You go through the game 4 times, you've beaten it on all the difficulty levels, and if you're not into finding items, well, you're done. You could play with some friends if you want to do some co-op fun later, but for the most part, I see a lot of people, they'll get a co-op group together, and they'll go through, they'll go all the way through, and they'll hit somewhere in Inferno when it starts requiring that you have better gear to move on. They hit a level of commitment that they can't match, and they say, all right, I'm done with Diablo. And it's been pretty obvious from the beginning of that game that there's still a lot of people playing, but a lot of people that were previously playing co-op dropped off. And the farming groups, like people like my buddies and I, we go farm Inferno for gear. And once you start getting into the metagame of trying to min-max your magic find to get better item drops from Inferno, you realize that if someone has a worse magic find than you, then you don't want them with you because it lowers your stat. Because it averaged currently, and the 1.04 patch will change it, but currently, if I've capped out my magic find and my buddies have a little bit lower and I have a buddy that's not wearing a magic find set, then our magic find rating gets tanked and the farming session is useless. So people that are serious about farming for gear don't play co-op because there's absolutely no reason to do it now.
Right.
So a lot of people that were previously playing together aren't. So, well, their data may be, all-encompassing and saying over the entire lifespan of the game, we know that more people were playing single player. I definitely, like, even from my own anecdotal evidence and watching, the hardcore players drop out of their farming groups and move to solo, I mean, it's pretty obvious that they need to do something to encourage co-op. And a lot of the 1.04 changes are going to do that, like, making players keep their magic find rating no matter how many players are in their game.
The
people that, quit because their class was nerfed or quit because there's a lack of content or quit because they feel that the item gold grind at the end of the game is not advancing their character well enough, then, that's why that Paragon system got put into place. So people will feel like even though they're still running on a treadmill, they'll at least have a goal to go towards.
Yeah, they've put that second carrot on the stick. And yeah. I don't know about you guys, but I really dislike playing Diablo solo. I don't know what it is. Like, I have no problem playing Torchlight solo just because I know that's how it is. But whenever I'm playing Diablo on my own, I'm just like, oh, man, like, this would be way better just rolling through with a couple extra people. So yeah. It's psychological. I don't know.
Yeah, I'm actually still, I think I'm in Act 2 or the beginning of Act 3 in that game. And it's mostly because, I waited so long to kind of really get into it because of BSA dev and stuff, and I don't have people to play with. So I find myself playing for like 30 minutes and almost getting bored. I'm like, well, part of the fun.
Brother, I'll play with you. You just got to ask.
I know.
I'll bring my level 60. We'll party.
Yeah.
He'll just don't let Mike
decimate
bring
the
level
board
60.
In front of you.
Don't let Mike dust everything.
Yeah, you weren't complaining when I took you to Oh, what's the
Happy
Shire?
Yeah.
Whimsy Shire.
Yeah, but that's different than coming into a game and just like being like, click, bwomp, everything's done.
It is funny to go back with a max level character and play normal mode or something and everything just vaporizes in your wake. But I mean, the thing is that game does end. I mean, it's got a story. It's not wow. It's not like, I'm going to get to the end of the game and I'm going to, you know, endlessly progress through the raid game and alternate level, enhancements.
I wonder if a large quantity of the vocal folks in this are people that never really were into, you know, Diablo 2 or whatever. You know, we're talking 10 years, so, you know, if these people...
Actually, if you go by the forums, most everybody complaining is like, this isn't as good as Diablo 2!
Yeah.
And then all those same people completely forgot that the expansion for Diablo 2 fixed a lot of the really major problems with it.
Yeah. It did, yeah.
And they have 10 years of playing post-expansion Diablo 2.
Yeah. Yeah. So, I mean, it's only been 3 months, but it is kind of interesting.
To that point, too, though, you would think that they've had 10 years to play that, and Blizzard's had 10 years, you know, not really, but 10 years in terms of gathering feedback about this game, that they would have be able to put some of those lessons into it when they released the first game. I mean, I went back...
Core change in staff also means a core change in the philosophy of designing a game like
Absolutely.
That.
Absolutely.
Almost none of the people who worked on the original two games are at Blizzard anymore.
Yeah.
And I think there's, other factors in play there, obviously, too. I mean, for Blizzard's acquisition, and there's other things that definitely go into it that I completely realize and account for. But it's also one of those cases where you stop and you look at their competition and what their competition is doing. And I mean, that's just it. Diablo 2 was like what everybody cloned, what everybody built their games off of. And so people have been waiting for Diablo 3. And in the meantime, you get some games that are really great that people play. I mean, like Quest for the Titans or Titan Quest.
Titan Quest was
an amazing game that did things right. And you have Torchlight, and now Torchlight 2 coming out that also gets that formula, that feeling more than anything else, right? That loot grind feeling downright. And this one just completely missed the ball. And I think that's rather interesting for it to have happened that way.
I mean, you see that, you probably saw over the weekend, I mean, Dave Brevik, who is one of the systems guys on Diablo and Diablo 2, criticized Diablo 3 about the fact that the loot felt, you know, tepid, you know, towards the end game, and a lot of other valid criticisms. But I mean, The problem is that Diablo and Diablo 2 were basically genre defining. They weren't the first games of that type, but they were the best games of that type at the time. And now that everybody has iterated and iterated on it, you know, and Blizzard iterated on it with Diablo 3, and they went a little bit of a different direction. But you know, I don't think they could have gotten away with making Diablo 2 again. I mean, a lot of people think that that's what they wanted. No. But the other thing is that a lot of people are forgetting is that Diablo 2 or Diablo 3, based on sales alone, is a massive success.
Yeah, 10 million plus or something like that, right?
Oh, yeah.
There, like, more people bought Diablo 3 already than will probably buy Torchlight 2.
Yeah. No,
over its entire lifetime.
Oh, for sure.
And I don't think that that's necessarily a good thing. Like, I love the shit out of Diablo 3, but, you know, I didn't give it a perfect score because I don't think it realized its potential.
Right.
So, and there's a lot of room to grow. There's a lot of room for people to make a more co-op friendly game. But the thing is, Diablo 3 is like, how co-op friendly is it? Like, you join a game, if you have Battle.net friends, the first thing you see is join this guy's game.
Yeah.
They have open slots, just jump in. Click this button, and you are playing with friends. Oh, they're off in a map somewhere, click on this, you're right with them. It takes 2 seconds, the game loads instantly.
And then they realize that your magic find screws them over, and they kick you out. I mean, yeah, it sounds really co-op friendly.
Yeah, but that's so far at the end of the spectrum.
that's metagame, and that isn't even a thing until you hit Inferno.
The thing to remember, too, with Blizzard is, and you can use Diablo 2 or StarCraft even as examples, is they support their game for an insanely long amount of time. Now, you're getting StarCraft updates 10 years after release, or right up until StarCraft 2 was even released. You know, and the same thing with Diablo 2. You know, the game was getting updates and tweaks and balances and stuff way, way, way after launch, way further than any other PC dev pretty much supports their games. You know, obviously console games are lucky to get support 6 months after release anymore, but So yeah, I mean, yeah, maybe right now, 3 months after, we're seeing where it is, but if you're in it for the long haul, you know, you're always going to get that itch. You're going to want to go back and be like, let's see what's new with Diablo 3, and of course there's going to be updates and stuff.
And that's also a lot of feeling too, it seems like, is people holding their breath waiting for, okay, this game gets good, when? And that's the whole interesting point from my standpoint is,
I don't think that's true at all. I think there's a very strong vocal community around it. I think there's a lot of satisfied people that have played Diablo 3.
I think a lot of the satisfied people who played Diablo 3 played through it maybe once or twice and then stopped playing.
That might be all they wanted. It's not those people that stayed on Battle.net for 6-7 years after release. It's a different group.
The other thing that people need to remember is that Diablo 2 is a really strong LAN game. Yeah. There are a lot of people that play it on Battle.net because of the ladder system, but most of my Diablo 2 playtime was actually on my college network. We just fired up, we grabbed a bunch of people, made games, and played them over the LAN.
Yeah.
And Diablo 3 doesn't allow that, so you get a lot of LAN party culture that still exists. I know plenty of that.
It's to say it doesn't support LAN play is kind of retarded, because every LAN you go to now is connected to the internet, so you're still in the same room, you're still getting that culture, you still can play together. But you're just going.
You're also still at. You're still at the whim of Battle.net being up.
Yeah,
and Battle.net goes down for 8 to 12 hours every Tuesday.
Yeah, how many Tuesday LAN parties have you gone to?
None anymore.
I'm just saying. there was a time when I had such a thing as summer vacation. I could play on a Tuesday.
Don't you think it's a big marketing flaw on Blizzard's part that they didn't really attack that issue well? We wanted it in there. That's why we don't allow LAN play.
But that's just it. There's been a lot of kind of missteps, in my view, for them to address their core audience for all this. And they're starting to gain a little bit of ground and come back with some stuff. But that's why I'm saying it's so an interesting picture to see with they're really behind this and they're supporting all the hype, and then it comes out and it's sort of like, oops. And their response isn't coming back in such a way that it gives the audience a lot of confidence and faith in them. To be able to go forward. I think that's the interesting thing, is to have watched both sides of what Blizzard's saying and what the audience is responding with. And you get people from all different groups that are the diehard people from 10 years ago. You get people who picked up for the first time, played through it, were perfectly happy, and were like, that was a lot of fun. Thanks. On to the next thing.
I was going to ask Mike, would you have played as much Diablo, 100 hours or whatever, if you didn't have co-op?
No.
Yeah, so...
No way. I wouldn't have even made it to Inferno
if I
wasn't playing with friends. Because, it's not a long game. I don't think it's short, but it's not crazy long. And actually, I was going to... one of the points that I was actually going to make is I find it interesting that the game that Blizzard, got huge off of was World of Warcraft, a massively multiplayer game. And one of the strongest selling points of WoW was, you could play it by yourself. You don't need to play with other people to play this game, even though this is a game that's designed to play with thousands of concurrent players.
Thousands of chuckleheads.
Of chuckleheads.
Blizzard's, but Blizzard, a lot of the communication going into Diablo made a lot of, WoW parallels. It's like, it's always online, and, you need a Battle.net account, and this and the other thing, and it started feeling like MMO-like, even though it's not a traditional MMO.
Yeah.
Diablo 2 is an MMO.
It's a hybrid. It's totally a hybrid.
Diablo 2 is an MMO in the same way the original Guild Wars was, is that, there's a lobby of a bunch of players that can all group together and go do things.
Yeah.
But it's I feel like the Blizzard's biggest problem, honestly, was that for the first couple months, like leading up to release and for the first couple of months of the game, they were like, it was all hubris. It's like, we have made Diablo 3. People will play this because. And the first couple patches that did things like, you know, make Inferno mode at best a zero-sum game for people because of the insane repair costs and the comparative lack of items that were dropping and the bad legendaries and all these things were like, oh, well, this is fitting with our vision of Diablo 3. And you're seeing an extreme amount of backpedaling on Blizzard's part with the 1.0.4 patch where they're like, we made it so that we tried to balance this like we would an MMO where everything needs to be balanced because everyone's playing together. But now they're coming at it from more of a philosophy of, oh shit, people play this by themselves or in small groups, and it doesn't fucking matter how overpowered a character class is.
Right.
Because one overpowered player doesn't do anything to any of the other players, and some people might argue that it can affect the auction house, but I think the auction house is one of those things that, you know, if you put a lot of money and gold into the auction house, congrats, that's your prerogative. You can do everything in Diablo 3 without touching that auction house, regardless of what the vocal minority of that game says. You get a lot of people on the forums like, I put 250 million gold into the auction house on these items, and you patched the game, and they're fucking useless now, you assholes. And it's like, look here, buddy. You didn't have to spend any money on actually, the auction house because...
That's a really good nerd voice.
That's actually a recording.
That's a really good entitled nerd voice.
It really irritates me because people are insistent that the auction house is how the game is played, and really, like, the best way to play the game, you know, if you get all the way to the end game of Inferno, get three of your buddies, put your fucking magic set on, and go kill things. You get four times as much loot, and if everyone's got good magic find, you'll be getting good items. And just keep clicking.
Just click it. There you
just
go.
Just never stop.
And you know
clicking.
What? If your character isn't min-maxed to the absolute pinnacle of awesomeness, so what? It's a video game,
we should make
guys.
A whole video about extreme mouse clicking lock.
Look at how good I am at Diablo!
We could do that all around PAX. We could just, like, we'll just, like, video ourselves,
DPI.
Like, doing extreme mouse clicking.
Look at this!
Double mouse! Look at my gold farming.
Alright, I think the show has run its course. Yeah.
I digress.
So let's wrap it up.
Okay.
No, why don't you wrap it up?
I will wrap it up right now.
I can wrap it out if you want.
Let's see. What do we got? Let's talk about the end of the show, and let's talk about our apps, our phone apps, our mobile apps.
Let's do it.
We got apps on your iPods, on your iPhones, on your Windows phones, on your Android phones, and your tablets and those things. So go get them. Hit your respective store and look for Co-Optimus and get it. We still got shirts at splitreason.com. We still need feedback on iTunes, and we're still on Twitter. We are Co-Optimus without the dash. We're also
get
on
all your co-op needs.
Yeah.
They increase your magic find.
They do.
Voicemail 646-926-6748. Why don't you people call us? What is it? It's Locke's fault, isn't it?
It is.
What?
Yeah.
Why?
Well, he's Canadian, so they think that they're going to have to be charged long distance.
That's right.
Yeah. It is actually not. Well, it might be. Long distance charges may apply. I'm not going to lie.
Yeah.
but not international.
You're giving up the game, Nick.
I know.
I promise to not talk about Diablo if you send in a question.
There we go. All right, so let me one more time, 646-926-6748. That's Co-op the Cast, episode number 91. We'll be back in a few weeks, post-PAX. We'll maybe talk about what we're doing there. Maybe we'll have an episode from PAX. Maybe we'll record something.
I think
there.
We should
I
have
a
PAX
will.
Show.
We could.
I think we will.
I think I should dial in.
And we'll
like,
get,
hey guys,
we'll get Max Payne
PAX?
On the podcast.
That's right. Andrew will be there. And Yeah. All right.
Well, watch the videos.
Cool. Thank you for watching/listening. That's it. Awkward silence now.